Welcome to the latest edition of He Said,
She Said.
I'm Michelle.
No, leave it. Don't stop that.
I was looking at you.
I know. It's fine.
I'm Peter Schorsch.
And I'm Michelle Todd Schorsch. You have me to thank for your laugh at Peter for the day. He did just try to edit out him calling himself me, but is not allowed to be edited out.
Thank you for joining us for another pod. I think we're
Which one are we recording today? Oh, he said, she said.
He said, she said. Little political one. This is basically, hey, you're traveling during Thanksgiving. You need something to listen to.
Listen to us?
Right.
I mean, why not?
And if you're done with this pod, check out Michelle's awesome new podcast. It's now on iTunes, Hallmark for the Holidays, where she...
And episode 2 is much better than episode 1.
Episode 2 was the most fun we've had, like, in 30 minutes.
We were just laughing.
We were dying.
So much.
And we're, no
we've
politics.
Hit our groove. No politics.
And we just talk about the Hallmark movie and everything else, and somehow...
And not just the Hallmark movie, but yeah, it's, you know, the Hallmark movie is the base, is the entry point, and... We get other stuff in there.
So check that out. That one is just
live. You don't have to love Hallmark movies to enjoy the podcast, is what I would say.
Thank you to Predict It for continuing to be a sponsor of He Said, She Said. I think we have a new sponsor coming up in advance of the legislative session. So that's kind of
that's exciting.
Yes.
That's news to me. I love when my partner tells me news while we're recording live.
Well, and it's also cool. I got to say, a lot of folks are actually asking to come onto the podcast. So we're going to have... a lot of news building up to the legislative session. Also, one more plug for Sunrise, which it is the perfect way to start your day. It's our podcast featuring Rick Flagg, 15 minutes, and you'll know everything you need to know about Florida politics, from what's going on in the Capitol, events throughout the state, and he's even got a running Florida man feature that is just hilarious. So check out Sunrise. So we've got a suite of podcasts for you to check out.
I mean, and that's your dream come true and your goal to be the next Bill Simmons, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do.
So we are sorry that we didn't record last week. We were traveling. We were on the road. We had a lot of great adventures. The best part of it was our best friends got married.
Congratulations to Mr. and Mrs.
Reggie Cardozo. It was a beautiful surprise wedding. We all went for an engagement party and, surprise, they got married, and it was really amazing.
All of a sudden, an arch came out, and then
Nikki Freed stepped up from where she was sitting and pulled out a binder, and then out came the groom, and then the flower girl. It was just, and the parents were screaming.
Yes.
Literally, people had no idea.
Yeah, it was awesome. They
pulled
that
off.
Thank
God we flew home early from Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that was, serendipitous.
I would have hated to miss that.
Right.
I would have hated to miss that. And the best part about the wedding, not the best part, but the second best part about the wedding is they did introduce us to the best brunch we've ever had.
Oh, Island Way Grill. And I don't know how we didn't know that already, but we just don't get up.
We don't go to North County.
We don't go to North County. But man, from oysters to those wok potatoes.
To all the sushi you could possibly want. All the breakfast goodies.
Except for one thing. And I want to talk about something that is really upsetting me.
I mean... And if you guys know Peter, you know that little things tend to upset him.
And this is going to be a running theme, I think, over the next, because I just saw that the holiday brunch is back at the Renaissance of Hanoi. Best brunch, like, in the state during the holidays.
Is there one this weekend?
No, it starts in December. I wish there was.
Because I would go this weekend.
Yeah. I diametrically oppose the omelet bar.
Omelet station.
The omelet station.
At a buffet.
I think it's the worst part of brunch. You are going up there, and the chef, who really doesn't want to be there. I mean, they were working till 11 o'clock the night before, and somehow they got stuck with the Sunday brunch omelet station shift. And you have people coming up there and ordering, you know, their omelets. And
what type of cheese do you have? Do you have fat-free cheddar? Is that from Vermont? Those people?
And they make the stupidest combinations. They just, it's like that stupid restaurant dish that went out of business, fortunately, long. People don't know
a long time ago.
What
I can't believe
want.
You're still holding on to that restaurant.
Oh, I hate
that. That was there when I was in high school.
Right. And I mean, still hate that restaurant. But you have people just like throwing together ingredients. They're like, oh, you know what? Why don't you take the Gruyere and some avocado and
some jalapenos.
And some jalapenos. And like the chef's just like, you dumb son of a bitch. And then they put all the ingredients in the thing, and then you stand there and watch the chef make an omelet. And it's the most, I mean, how uncomfortable clear, for everybody.
I do not do that. There's no universe that I would ever, ever, ever participate in an omelet station or hover over a human as they made my food. It just, nothing sounds less appealing to me.
Well, but see, that's the thing. You don't know when your omelet's ready. So you don't know if you need to leave. If you, the moment you go back to your table is like when the chef will tell you, hey, by the way, your omelet's ready.
So you actually can figure that out. Because there were times when I would get egg white omelets, like when I was getting ready for our wedding. Very, very small times in our life.
But then you have everybody hovering. It is the worst
breathing
process
on your food. I just don't know why so many brunches have a menu item, an entree that you get to order, like that amazing brunch we had in Puerto Rico.
Right.
You know, you get the buffet, and then there is, you get to order an entree as part of their brunch. Why can't the omelet be on that menu? Why can't the chef in the kitchen make it and your server bring it to your table? Why do I have to do the work? That's the, yeah, I hate an omelet station.
I'm opposed to the omelet station, and I'm going to be investigating this. I'm going to be putting some resources. I might find some reporters. We've got our new reporter, Renzo Downey, which is like the best name ever. He's in from
the, welcome to the family, Renzo.
Renzo Downey. Thank you to the Governor's Inn, by the way, for on short notice putting up Renzo. Renzo wanted to get started right away. Flew in from California. Has been letting Renzo stay there. I've always said if you've got business at the Capitol, the Governor's Inn is just so perfect in terms of you can walk, you know, any of the offices that are all the lobbying firms, all the government offices that are right there. You know, they've really upgraded the rooms from when people stayed there a couple years ago. I don't know if they've given it a new shot. There's been new ownership over the last year and a half. You know, they've got that perfect 5 o'clock happy hour. The valets
still
are great.
My favorite tradition.
Yeah.
I love their 5 o'clock happy hour. And it is, don't ever stay at that other place we've talked about. Stay at the Governor's Inn.
Just Governor's Inn all the way. If you've got an event in Tallahassee, the people that are listening to this, go there. Tell Steve and Kevin that you heard our recommendation on the podcast. I don't know what that will get us, but they are good friends of the pod for working in Renzo and our cast of reporters that have been moving in and out of the Capitol. So
I know that you are focused on these little things like omelet stations.
Yes.
But you actually have had a busy week, regardless of what your obsession with minor things would make people think. I've barely seen you this week. What's been going on?
Well, Ron DeSantis rolled out his budget proposal. $91.4 billion. It's always awesome to get all the press releases from the executive agencies saying how much they love the governor's budget. And you're like,
work for him.
You work for him. I just want one agency head to go like, you know, this budget
sucks.
You know, it's we were left out.
You know, I was really, really I was lobbying Shane for this amount, this allocation in the budget. We got shit. Why did we get screwed? And just that's what you're waiting for.
You put that in a press release. Halsey Bashir's DPBR, whatever, puts it out and just like, yeah, this is about 18% less than we thought, and we're just not happy.
Yeah, I can't enforce no new regulations. I can't enforce them. There's going to be cuts. I didn't get the budget I wanted. Is that what's going to be happening?
So that came out.
But the teachers are happy, right?
I keep saying this. The number one thing is Ron DeSantis's proposal to increase teachers' starting salaries. I don't care what else the legislative session does. That's going to be the big issue. If he does that, the person that presided over the wedding that we were at on Saturday probably doesn't run against him in 2022 because he will have the support of...
But you told everybody in your toast that she would be the next governor.
No. I said future U.S. Senator.
Future U.S. Senator. That's true. Sorry, Team DeSantis. He did not say that.
No, he did say future
U.S. Senator. That's accurate. I had a little bit of champagne.
And by the way, the talk is this week that Mike Pompeo may go back to Kansas and that Rubio...
Oh, I read your Twitter feed. So, and then, Senator Matt Gaetz?
No, well, Senator Marco Rubio would then get appointed to Secretary of State. DeSantis would appoint Gaetz. You know, Marco Rubio, of course, is like, oh, I would never not, you know, he's just so full of shit.
Oh, none of us believe you, Marco. You would take the first opportunity to climb to a higher office.
Yep.
that it was presented to you. So please just stop insulting our intelligence.
I just wish he would say, I am flattered to be in the consideration, or I'm flattered that people put my name out there when thinking about the most important cabinet position, that this is what Alexander Hamilton was, that this is what Arnie Vinnick was.
And then yes, I want an Alexander Hamilton and an Arnie Vinnick reference in the same statement.
And if he just did that
in the same tweet
and said, but you know what? It's most likely I'm going to stay and serve. I'm happy in the U.S. Senate. I've accomplished some. Marco Rubio actually accomplished a couple of things this week. A big bill on Hong Kong. He moved forward. He got some more sponsors on his daylight savings bill. But it's just so disingenuous.
I hate the daylight savings bill. Yet another reason to dislike Marco Rubio. I enjoy daylight savings time.
And so we had the
budget. I enjoy the change back and forth. I like it to say just as it is now. I like more dark. I like it darker earlier.
I like that it screws with everybody.
I like the light in the morning when I have to wake up. I like the sun. I like to get up when the sun comes up, and I like to go to bed when it's dark. And it's really hard to put an elementary school kid to bed while the sun is up. So I love this time of year. Please don't change the clocks again.
I just love that people can't figure it out. Like, it takes people like weeks to like figure out like, oh, I haven't reset the clock on my microwave, and so I'm late for work. I mean, I've got reporters that.
Well, that's an excuse. They're lying to you. They just like Googled lame excuses for missing work when I was actually hungover.
I don't know how many. All right. And so the other part of my week, I was down in Miami. I spoke with the Florida Association of Counties. Wonderful Janet Long was there.
And you know how much I hate when you travel when it's not for pleasure. I just can't stand.
I did 36 hours. I was a road warrior. I did dinner with Dean Cannon Tuesday night. Dean went to bed early. It was just such a... It was such a disappointment.
It's because of Dean Cannon that my Christmas lights aren't up yet on the outside of my house. Clark Griswold is failing. But by the time you all hear this podcast, my house better be lit up so bright that you can see it from outer space.
And so then I did a bunch of meetings, spoke at the Florida Association of Counties. And then I got to say, one of the coolest of things I went to was the Autonomous Vehicle Summit was down in Miami. So it's like it's dork prom for Jeff Brandis and Jason Fisher and that whole crew. Very cool setup. We were down at like where Ford does the testing of what they're rolling out. It's the Ford Autonomous Vehicle Terminal. It was in Wynwood. So it's like this cool area already. And yet they've got this industrial thing set up, but it was like this open air garage all lit up. It was very, very, very Miami, but the best part of Miami. You could tell the engineers with the AV stuff were going to party all night long. And it was just this like, very interesting. It was as forward thinking as Florida got. You saw, you know, you had people from Ford, you had people from all the big tech companies out there, you had venture capitalists, you had artists doing performance art, you know, people having great, there were great artisanal donuts and artisanal drinks. Very cool event. I could only stay for a little bit because I stayed by our rule of not spending more than two nights away. And I wanted to get home so that I could wake up for Ella.
Because Ella is actually really obsessed with you right now. She is. If I could say, and people might take this the wrong way, I don't know, but if there is a silver lining to my dad's passing and my time with him when he was in ICU and hospice, it is that you and Ella are closer than ever. You guys got a lot of one-on-one time while I was away taking care of my dad. And... you know, there's now like a pretty even split between us, which is nice to see.
I would never say it. Yes.
No, I mean, she wouldn't choose her favorite between us the other day. And that's the first. Normally it's resoundingly mommy is the favorite, but she cannot choose between us now, which I'm thrilled for. That's what I've wanted her whole life.
7 years later.
You're on equal footing with me. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. There's, you know, and you saw it like on the Disney cruise and we've got her own little vibe now. She likes to, you know, she likes to show me different stuff.
She does.
And
she comes to each of us for different things. Yeah. And that's how it's supposed to be.
That's how you want it to be. Yeah, so I feel, you know.
So, yes, thank you for honoring our rule and rushing back because she really did not like that you were gone.
And so, yeah, I don't like being away from her. But also, as I'm leaving, I'm in the airport. I was watching, which was weird. I was in Broward County Fort Lauderdale.
Everyone read your Twitter feed. We all know how upset you were by the lack of the presidential debate being on in the airport.
And you could just see me being angry at everybody.
It's like,
where is the debate? And get those omelet stations out of my face.
But can I just point out something to you? The last thing we want in an airport is angry, aggressive travelers. We don't want to do anything to agitate people to make the airport even more stressful and air travel even more stressful than it is. So, of course, they don't have the debates on, babe. What were you thinking?
Yeah, and also you can't hear it. It's not like...
Well, I mean, they could, you know,
they could pipe it in a little bit. Yeah, they could have. I mean, they had other news channels on, so it wasn't like they went all sports or something like that. I would have thought somebody would have asked to see it.
Right, that's true.
And clearly... And again, Broward. I mean, you're talking about Deep Blue Broward.
Deep Blue Broward.
It wasn't on. What did you think of the... I mean, did you watch any part of it or...
You know the answer to that question already. Absolutely not. I told you that I was going to rely on Twitter to tell me who won the debate, which clearly Twitter said it was Mayor Pete all day long.
The conventional wisdom is he went in as the front runner.
Can we talk about how amazing that is that he went in as the front runner? Think about this long shot guy who's now the front runner. That's insane, right?
So the back end of this podcast.
It's as insane of a reality television star being president of the United States currently.
The back end of this podcast is me and Tampa Bay Times political editor Steve Contorno at Tiger Bay, which will be kind of cool. And we talk about it, so you'll hear this. It is a seminal moment. I don't think Mayor Pete's going to win. I don't think he would beat Donald Trump, and I don't think he'll end.
No, I don't think he will either, but he's really fun, and I love him.
And he is, but this is, think of all of the people that we've met in our life, young members of the LGBTQ community, and they are seeing one of theirs.
It's amazing.
On equal footing with someone else. And I don't know what the first example is. Like, I'm sure I'm going to hear about it, but like, I was thinking like, when Jesse Jackson ran in the 80s and how that laid the groundwork for Barack Obama.
Right.
What Mayor Pete's doing is, short of not winning, is he is laying some incredible groundwork, and somebody is a gay or lesbian member of the or part of the LGBTQ community is going to win the presidency in 2032 or what have you. And it's going to be because of what's happening right now in Iowa. And so, yeah. It's whatever the equivalent to the glass ceiling is, he's up there banging away on it right now, and it's exciting. And he is just a likable candidate.
He's brilliant.
I was just going to say, it's a very smart field.
It is a really smart field.
Cory Booker is not getting any credit for being a super, super smart guy. Kamala Harris, super, super smart woman.
My poor girl. I mean, she just fell off. Now, I don't even know if she's in contention for a vice presidential spot. What do you think?
Oh, I think, remember, Biden didn't do well and fell off and then came. I think the people who you want for what, you know, if the benchmark is, would this person be able to step in and replace me as president? I think Kamala Harris.
Yeah, probably. No, I agree. Listen, I'll say it right now. If anyone picks their vice presidential nominee before,
I think that's what Biden's going to have to do.
Then, and it's Kamala, I'll vote for, that's who gets my vote. I'm all on board because I love Kamala. You know this.
I think Biden, I've said it. I've been saying it. No offense to Steve Shale. Biden finishes fourth or fifth in Iowa, finishes third in New Hampshire at best. Yes, he should be winning South Carolina, but by that point, you know, there's going to be a run on the bank. Then he's got to pivot. He has no money relatively to everybody else. Like, he's got less money than Mark Kelly's U.S. Senate campaign in Arizona. He has little cash on hand, has trouble raising money. I thought he looked terrible Wednesday night. I mean, he looked very old. But I will say, if he were to like roll the dice, Kamala just dropping out and Biden goes to Kamala and says, hey, listen, let's do this because we together could beat Donald Trump. Then they would lock up South Carolina. They would do very well in Nevada, her home state. California's early. He's going to have to do something to recapture the momentum. And so wouldn't that be exciting if he did that?
It would be exciting. It's almost as exciting as the new candidate in the presidential race.
Our guy.
Yeah. I mean, currently, this is who's going to get my vote.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
Mayor.
Bloomberg. He's my guy.
Why?
He was a really great mayor of New York, and I actually agree a lot with what he stands for. You know that I'm independent-minded, and he was independent-minded, too, and it's just, we're there. And I like the fresh, the excitement. I think he can win. You know, Donald Trump has money. Donald Trump is a, if we are going to compare billionaires here, we would call Donald Trump a little B billionaire and Bloomberg a big B billionaire.
Right.
And I think Bloomberg could pull it off.
He's worth $56 billion.
Like, dollars.
So he, let's say he carves out 10% of his wealth.
Let's say he wants to save this
country.
I'll
go work for him.
Yeah, he wants to save this country from another 4 years of Donald Trump.
Right.
And the mandate that that gives Donald Trump at that point, he has the money to invest to win this race. So if I am a betting woman, that's where I'm going to put my smart money, is with Bloomberg. I think he has, I think he has the best chance to beat Donald Trump in the general election. And that is my only goal.
I don't think he's got the best chance. I think he's still, he is still a...
I know, but I've just so much fun to say
I still do think he is a liberal New Yorker, as he will say, very Jewish. I just think he has a lot of things that are still... He's not the most likable person in the world. He's not like... He was less likable than Rudy was as mayors. I don't know if you know this or not. I don't know if I've mentioned it or not, but I lived in New York.
You lived in New York for like 5 minutes, and it's all we hear. I think Ella has been in New York for as much time as you were when you lived there now at this point on our travels. I mean, so you can stop saying that to me.
So, and it was, he, like, Giuliani was was an incredible mayor of New York and saved that city in a lot of ways. And yet somehow, Bloomberg came along and made it
even
better.
I miss New York City under Bloomberg.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. It was the...
I mean, we were just in New York, and even people were saying they miss Bloomberg
right.
as mayor.
It's not bad. It's just not as great as it was under Bloomberg. I remember when they brought in that artist. I talked about it when we were up there. The artist that had
the waterfalls
cascading off of the bridges. I mean, they did those kind of just bold public arts installations.
I remember when I wasn't walking over trash on the sidewalks.
Yeah, that's something.
I mean, honestly.
Yeah, you noticed it.
It's a big difference.
It's a little bit
now.
Dirtier there. So
it's, yeah. If I'm being honest, he's just exciting. It just made the race more fun again. It was starting to get a little boring for me.
Well, and here's the thing. We talk about the debates. There's only two more before Iowa. I mean, there's
right.
not a lot.
And I promise I'll watch the next ones. I just, you know.
We're watching a lot of Hallmark stuff. And like,
we are. I'm very busy with Hallmark movies and Christmas.
Well, and it's the best news in our house. How amazing
are the Christmas trees we picked out last night?
Is the incredible streaming opportunities that we have now. Is Disney Plus the greatest addition to our house ever?
Yes, it is. Sorry.
What's so funny? What
is nothing. I love you. That's all. Yes, Disney Plus is amazing. Ella is so thrilled by it. I can't wait to introduce her to Lizzie McGuire, the original series.
Right.
In preparation for the new Lizzie McGuire series that's coming out. It's amazing to me.
There's 30 seasons of The Simpsons, and I don't even watch The Simpsons.
I need to figure out how to block that, though. I don't want, like, I hope I can put age restriction settings on there for Ella, because I don't ever want her watching The Simpsons. That's not the type of stuff I would like her to watch.
Well, something I talk about in the Tiger Bay thing is I think, so how, like, there's so many great options on, what are you watching right now? What we've got.
I told you, I've been a little overwhelmed by all the streaming options.
Okay.
I feel like there's just too much streaming. I don't even know where to go.
And
none of it's on the same platform. And so I spent, I don't even know how long yesterday, scrolling through Netflix, and I just couldn't find anything I wanted to watch because I was like, no, I want to save that to watch with Peter, or no, I want to watch that with Ella. And oh, wait.
We got to do The Crown.
We do have to watch The Crown. And then I was like, oh, man, now let me go check out Apple TV. And I was like, all right, let's
and
watch.
And you really don't go to Amazon Prime that much, do you?
I do. I actually, if I'm being honest, I watch Amazon Prime probably more than anything.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes, I find a lot on Amazon Prime that I like.
See, I do too, but I never mention them. Everybody always says Netflix, and I always think, but wait a second, Jack Ryan's over here, and the movies are sometimes easier to get to.
But I've been finding a lot of great stuff on Disney Plus to watch with Ella. and
the catalog is insane.
The catalog is insane.
People forget all of the.
It hits all the right notes for me at this time of year too. You know, it really satisfies the nostalgic part of me that is longing for the simpler times. So when I watch shows that were from my childhood, it's amazing. I am still waiting for them to put out the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse when Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake and crew were all, and Christina Aguilera were all Mouseketeers.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why that's not on Disney Plus already, but Disney, you need to get your shit together and put that on Disney Plus because we need some real Mickey Mouse Club.
That's so many episodes, right? That's like a daily, wasn't that?
And I would like the original Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want all of Mickey Mouse Club on Disney Plus, and I'm hoping they roll it out. They just announced a whole new slate of stuff that's coming out on there.
Ella's most excited about
National Geographic.
She went to National Geographic.
National Geographic. The National Geographic channel on Disney Plus is Ella's favorite thing.
And also, you talked about the Imagineering documentary as
Yeah, there's a really cool Imagineering series that you can watch. There's only been two episodes so far. I watched the first one, and it was how Walt Disney built Disneyland. And I just learned so much stuff that I didn't know. I mean, yes, it had to have been a pipe dream then, and people must have thought he was crazy. But yes, they did. Like, did you know they didn't have enough money for landscaping when they built Disneyland?
No, I didn't.
So they literally put out an ad saying, if you have trees or that you would like removed from your property, we will come remove them from you for you free of charge. And they took trees that they removed from other people's properties and they planted. That's what they planted at Disneyland as the trees.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just so there's cool stuff like that. There's Kristen Bell has a show called Encore where she.
I love Kristen. Oh, that's what's coming out today. I can't believe we're not even.
Frozen
about
2. We're going to see it this weekend.
We'll talk about it.
It's had mixed reviews. It's been a mixed bag. It's a little darker.
See, I was hoping that the Joker would be in this.
Well, there is no villain.
There wasn't a villain in the first one.
There was.
No, it was the little bureaucratic guy. And then, well, yeah.
No, it was the guy who tried to steal the. No, there was a villain.
But nobody thinks really about them.
The villain in this one is the great unknown, which is a little scary for kids.
That's the villain in life.
Right,
I
know.
So.
I hear you. I'm just replaying what some of I have read is. That's all. But yeah, Kristen Bell has a show called Encore on Disney Plus.
I love her.
She reunites. It's a reality show. She reunites casts of High School Musicals, and they get back together they leave their lives for 1 week. And they rehearse with real Broadway producers and costumers and music directors and orchestras. And they restage the musicals they performed in high school. So I watched, you know, it was like the 1985 cast of Annie in some high school in New Jersey. And they restaged it. And it was really fascinating
with
to see.
Terry, what's his name? Who was Kojak? Was it Albert Finney?
No.
It was Albert Finney.
It was high school casts, babe.
Oh, okay.
Not like big casts. Like, she went to Northeast High School.
Got it.
Yes.
Got it. All right.
So you can see, like, the prom queen and the prom king are no longer together, and you can see the dynamics playing out. It's a fun show to watch, that's all. Especially if you were ever a drama geek.
What are you thinking about Apple TV so far?
I still don't know what the big deal is. I feel like Apple TV maybe isn't quite sure what to do with their platform. There's not a lot of original content yet. I like the network. I'm enjoying it. I still don't know how they're rolling it out. Like, they rolled out with 3 episodes and now there's 2 more. Is it like 1 more a week is coming now? That's not clear.
What does a week mean to a digital platform?
I
don't know why
you
wouldn't do that. Like,
but Disney Plus is doing week by week on theirs too. On their new
stuff.
That's
such a weird concept to me nowadays. Like, the idea that I have to wait. I don't want to do that. It's like.
Right. I hear you on that. Like, I want to binge the network all the way through.
I've got too much. Because
I will forget.
I will go to a show that I can binge rather than not to.
Yes.
Like, I'm still on Netflix more so than Apple TV because I'm not going to be able to remember, especially during the holidays, to come back to the new episode of For All Mankind.
I will say the one thing I like is
a good show, by the way.
When you go into Apple TV.
Yeah.
It does pull up some of the other streaming services that you have been watching stuff in and, like, populates that there. So if they can figure out how to populate all of the streaming under one umbrella there where I can see it all and I'm centralized, then I think they'll make
the
it
Apple
work.
The Apple TV interface is the best interface, I think. Like the actual, like the box, I think that's still the best interface. There was one other big TV show this week that people were watching, and it's on a streaming service called MSNBC Plus and NBC Plus. And it was the hours and hours of impeachment proceedings, which is this hugely historical event, and yet the audiences weren't super big for it.
Let me paint a picture for you all, though. We got off a cruise ship in Puerto Rico and set foot on the most beautiful resort either one of us has ever seen and stepped into our beautiful suite with our private swimming pool on our private beach. And rather than enjoy the beauty with us, Peter said, I just want to go watch the impeachment. So while we were enjoying one of the most beautiful properties in the world, my husband was enjoying the greatest reality show on earth, the president's impeachment.
And I wanted to watch it because, you know, I needed to get a sense of these characters like Gordon Sondland and so forth. And it really did. Adam Schiff is not made for television. He's a very straightforward prosecutor with those bright eyes. I don't know. None of it, like, I know that the New York Times is like, these are dramatic moments and everything like that. I kind of agree with the Republicans who say this is just muddying the waters. As much as Sondland said what he said about it being a quid pro quo, he also said he never heard it from anybody ever. So it's just, we know where this is ending. This is a TV show that we know
It doesn't even matter. He's not going to be out of office.
They're going to impeach him.
And then
courageous people like Marco Rubio.
Right.
I mean, it's going to are not going to vote to impeach it. It's going to happen for a couple months. If I'm Nancy Pelosi, I'll talk about this. In fact, that's a good segue to our next segment, the Tiger Bay thing. What I think about there, I kind of answer that. Why don't we pivot to that? Because,
well, let's first have a word from our sponsors.
I think we owe that to them.
We do owe that to them.
Okay, here's a word from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
A lot of people give their opinions on politics and not just the talking heads on cable news. Everyone has an opinion. Sometimes a gentleman's wager can be the best way to tell how much someone believes their own spin. That's why you should check out what Predictit is doing. Predictit is like the stock market, but for politics. Instead of buying and selling oil futures, you can buy and sell shares in everything from who the Democratic nominee will be to if the president will be impeached. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He Said, She Said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predictit.org/promo/FLAPOL.
Okay, I know you didn't go to it, and you probably will maybe only listen to a minute of it, but it was a good time.
Was a good time? Tiger Bay.
Tiger Bay.
You were on a panel at Tiger Bay. You guys were talking about the election 1 year out, right?
Yep.
And it was you and Steve Contorno from the Tampa Bay Times.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what that last segment was all about.
Yep. I just, you know,
how much you didn't listen to.
Nope. I absolutely paid attention, but sometimes
you weren't following it on Twitter. You weren't following
what your debate, your panel. I was texting you trying to find out information because I forgot what I was doing while you were at that speech, but it was very important.
It was.
I needed your credit card number. I was trying to buy tickets to the Nutcracker.
And I think they were trying to put up some of the lights. So.
Yes, and I was dealing with Christmas lights, my candy. They were candy caning my trees instead of barber pulling them.
Yeah.
If you all know me, I made them take it all down and start over again.
So it was good. I did enjoy. I always like having a fresh relationship with somebody at the Times. And so Steve Contorno and I are off to a good start.
Everybody, give Peter a pat on the back next time you see him. Good job, babe. I'm proud of you for.
I haven't blown him up.
A good boy.
I haven't tweeted bad at him or anything like that. He's younger than his.
That was your first impression.
The first thing
you said to me was like, he's really, really young. He's like in his 20s.
Yeah, he's a younger guy. I thought he looked older in his.
That's nice.
No, he's more distinguished. Okay. So there it goes. There goes the relationship.
Yep,
right
it's
there.
Out the window. Bam. All right. So you guys enjoy my husband on a panel at Tiger Bay. I know that everybody at Tiger Bay enjoys it. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any final thoughts, honey?
No.
All right. Well, enjoy Tiger Bay and we will catch you next week.
allowing to ask Matt to introduce our candidates, and please enjoy this afternoon's conversation. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Kelly. Thank you very much to PRC for joining us. Just real quick introductions. Peter's been here a lot, a member of Tiger Bay for many, many years. Started St. Peter's blog a decade plus ago, covering St. Pete politics, St. Pete city elections, and really dove in and made a name for himself in that. In the years since, he's become Florida politics, and Sunburn, and Sunrise, and all sorts of different media to talk about politics throughout the state of Florida. And his success is solely in the hands of his wife, Michelle, and his daughter, Ella. And Peter's not behind his 15-screen workstation. He is on the high seas on a Disney cruise pretending to be Captain Hook. And he just got off the cruise ship, as you can see. Steve is relatively new to St. Petersburg, the Tampa Bay area, hailing from the state of Illinois, and he has the Lincoln beard to match. He had stints in Wisconsin, Virginia, and D.C. covering politics, and took over for Adam Smith at the Tampa Bay Times as political editor earlier this year. And I believe nice of you guys to finally meet. Hopefully you guys have a better relationship than Peter and Adam did for the last 10 years until the runaway sir. Did you trash it? But I think this is Steve's first appearance at Tiger Bay. So, well, first time speaking, first time I've covered a few times, so well, welcome, and we're really glad you're here. I want to just kind of start off with kind of lightning round of questions. But before that, okay, based on what's happened in the last week or so in national politics, give you guys a couple minutes just to kind of give your take on the state of the impeachment inquiry. Yeah, Steve? Well, that's an easy one to start out with. Well, thank you all for having me here. I really appreciate it. Like I just said, I've been on the side of covering this before, but never as up in this chair, so I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with all of you. It was an interesting start this past week. Certainly, it seems like there are two realities going on. And one, where we're getting closer and closer to impeaching the president. The other, where we are, this whole thing is just becoming bigger and bigger hopes by the day. So it's kind of hard to make sense of where it's going to go from here. So far, there haven't been any anyone who's left the president's side among Republicans. There are a couple of who have said that they would be open to considering the idea of impeachment, including Florida's own Representative Francis Rooney, who is retiring, said as much as soon as he sort of became one of those people who was on the fence. So as long as, you know, Republicans stick together, I think when we put out a Florida Insider poll, Adam Smith did that for a long time, taking over that bit, and we asked, you know, 200 of our Florida Insiders what they think is going to happen, and 90% said that they think the House is going to move forward with impeachment, and then the Senate will vote not to convict, and that's obviously just falls along party lines. So I think that's probably the most likely outcome based off what we see today, but things are changing very quickly. Who knows what was said in the last 45 minutes while I've been here? So I can walk up out to breaking news.
Yes, I started to dress like Mario Batali today. I did 36 hours of Dog and Pony shows in Tampa, Lauderdale, and Miami, and I just needed to like chill out. So I figured my hometown, Tiger Bay, would forgive me. I looked at the impeachment stuff, and it makes perfect sense to me because it's just all about the streaming wars. You see Disney Plus. You see HBO Max coming, and so how does MSNBC respond? With MSNBC Plus. And so now you've got this impeachment streaming on television all of the time, and that's what's driving this, is that it's just it's a fantastic television show, and so we're not breaking away from that. In fact, if you look at what Trump said in Ukraine, what he wanted him to do, he didn't want an investigation. He wanted the guy to go on TV and say it. And so everything is being driven by this TV coverage, and it's basically a great, other than, if you're not watching Hallmark movies right now, as we do in the Shores household, you have an impeachment show on. And we all know how it's going to end, just like how we know the Hallmark movie's going to end. The marketing executive's going to marry her hometown sweetheart, Santa Claus, who's Henry Winkler, is going to come in at the end. This is going to get, they're going to get impeached. Put it this way, the possibility of Donald Trump being removed from office depends solely on the courage of Marco Rubio. And we know how much courage Marco Rubio has. I think about Marco Rubio. Stephen Miller, who is Donald Trump's main domestic advisor, is literally channeling to Breitbart, making fun of this man's Hispanic heritage. He is dogging him through the entire time, and Rubio has said no. And so, you know, none of those crazy senators from the West, people whose names we don't even know, or people like Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, Scientologists don't have a senator yet. They're not going to break. So we'll come down to some of these big senators, Collins, Rubio, Scott, and they're just not going to break. And so I will say this, though, and there was a great point made last night during the debate. I think it was Klobuchar who said, if you need an example of a woman's ability to beat Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi does it every day. If Nancy Pelosi is as smart as I think she is, and she is clearly, although McConnell is a really good tactician as well, Pelosi was able to get through health care, and I still don't think they have the votes for it. I still don't know how she was able to do that. If she could just lay a sick body blow on Trump, like, I don't even know if she can, like, pull up at the end, but this is all just negative television ads against Donald Trump. And if she can, like, get to January, and she has done 3 months of negative television against the most television-centered president ever, and the Democrats don't overextend, she will have done as much as anybody will have done to get a Democratic candidate for the White House.
Perfect segue. So it's November 2020, second week, third week of November. We've gone through, barring any recounts or Supreme Court cases, which Democrat is now president-elect, and how did they win? And did they win in Florida? And Steve? There's two paths that I think, this is an answer, not an explanation. So you want me to just say, Democrat won? I'm not a pundit like Peter is. He's going to go on his hot takes. And,
that's my next website, hottakes.com.
You already have it. It seems like the smart money remains on Joe Biden. That money is becoming less and less smart every day. I think his performance last night in the debate, for anyone who stayed up to watch it after 12 hours of hearings, showed that he has a lot of weaknesses, and that's going to be a problem. But at this point, looking at how the states after Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina sort of play out, he would have to finish very poorly in all of those, I think, in order for him to not have the strength in those states to come away with the nomination. He could finish very poorly in those states, and right now he's certainly not doing very well in Iowa. I do not think that based off what we're seeing today, that any Democrat will win Florida unless the party comes through on its promise to register hundreds of thousands of voters and sort of exercise the demons of the last 10 years of statewide elections or longer. It's certainly possible that a lot can change it now, but the number of registrations in the state, the track record of Republicans here versus Democrats, this still is Trump country in a lot of ways. He has a very strong base here. I think it's more likely than not that the Democrats, if they do have a path to victory, it's going to be through the Midwest versus Florida.
Peter, who's the president-elect Democrat, and how did they win?
It's President Elizabeth Warren.
I would have said Warren, he would be saying Biden.
Right. Now you're learning, see? This is why you always go second on answers. He waits and then he comes up with some beautiful answer. You forgot it. So Biden finished his sixth in Iowa, right? I mean,
yes.
I've seen people at Terry Brett's funeral home that look more alive than I saw Joe Biden last night. I mean, his eyes were about to roll over like the shark in Jaws. I mean, just dark black eyes. He looked like he had 3 Jim Gimlets before he'd come into the debate. He just looked like crap. And I'm a guy who really likes Biden. That would be Klobuchar. To my regret, it's not going to be Kamala Harris, although I think Kamala, if it's anybody other than Warren, could definitely be on the ticket. If Biden and Harris worked out a deal now, you know, Christmas surprise, and said, hey, you know what? To kickstart my campaign, Kamala Harris is dropping out, and she's endorsing my campaign, and she's probably going to be my VP. That may be something that could be radical enough. I think the thing about Warren, and there's a great article by guy at Snapchat, Peter Hamby, wrote an article about 2 months ago, and it continues to be true. Elizabeth Warren is running a campaign. Mm-hmm. Like, and we forget that. And she is doing, so we're so used to people just being a reality show host and becoming president, we forget that this is a lot of blocking that's happening. And she is laying layer upon layer of campaign. And that's how you traditionally win these things. She'll finish strong in Iowa, maybe second or third. She'll get to New Hampshire, probably finish first there. South Carolina's going to be tough for her because of the demographics there. Nevada's going to be tough. But you know what? California has moved up this year. I think it is maybe fifth or sixth to go on the open. You will have to win California. So I'm going to put my predicted money. And by the way, if you ever need a referral to predicted.org, please let me know. It's predicted.org/florapolitics. I would go with more.
All right. Now it's still still November 2020, but President Trump has won. Why?
So I would put my predicted money on Trump at this point. Steve and I talked about this, so I'm going to steal all the content that he and I talked about ahead of time.
Otherwise, well, I'm going to go first. It's going to be an aggregator.
I had to make our dots, right? So Florida is just his firewall. I don't think that will. Florida stays in the red column. Michigan and Pennsylvania go to the blue column. I think, you know, Michigan, whatever you call a person from Michiganders. No, that's terrible. I think they've had some really bad problems with Republicans. They're ready to flip. Pennsylvania is obviously ready to go back. Those old white dudes up in Wisconsin, I don't think they're flipping back. I think those guys that look like Ned Beatty and Rudy, I think they're gonna stay with Trump. And then so it comes down to like weird states. Now I won't steal our content that, you know, the analysis that you saw, but it's gonna be something weird, like somebody's gonna have to flip, you know, not just Colorado, but like they'll have to win Arizona. Like the Democrats will have to win Arizona, which is a possibility because Mark Kelly is on the top of the ballot out there in the US Senate, and he's raising voodoo bucks. That's gonna be, you know, one of the most important Senate races out there. It would be interesting maybe if like the Democrats flip Arizona. It's very much gonna be a West Wing. Remember the presidential election in West Wing, where it was like, because the guy was from California, he picked that up, so the Democrats had to win Texas, but then all these other like weird states that have happened. I think, as far as predictions, we're gonna see the blowing up of the Electoral College in terms of the map, in terms of, I think you're gonna see some very weird states flip that haven't flipped before.
Steve, you got it? I generally agree with a lot of that. I actually was looking at a predicted sort of model, and it's said that it's going to be essentially a tie and come down to a couple electoral college swings, including the one vote. So Omaha, Nebraska, like has like they split theirs up, and you can win one. Obama won one of them, for example, in 2008, but he lost the rest of the state, and that one vote ends up deciding this whole thing. But it, I don't know if we're going to see a blowing up of the map, but I think we're going to certainly start to see the cracks that we're going to have in 2024 and 2028 for sure, where Georgia, North Carolina, further out there, Texas, become at play for Democrats. But the North, as baby boomers retire and more people are leaving those states who have college educations for bigger cities, those become older and whiter, those are going to become redder and redder. And so you're going to see the map starting to shift. I don't know if it's going to be the full blow, like Peter said, but we might, we could see North Carolina flip back again, Georgia. I think it's probably more likely that the states in the West, maybe Iowa or New Hampshire, if Trump can win New Hampshire, that might put him over the top. But it's not going to be Ohio deciding. Florida, Florida and Ohio are going to be your traditional swing states that bellwethers. Ohio, I just talked to people there yesterday. They said it's off the map. We're not even counting it. Florida, they're going to fight here because they need Trump to spend a lot of money here, and it's going to be within a half percentage. But it still seems like really not to be for Trump. All right, let's talk Congress. Who controls the House? No commentary, just who? Democrats.
Democrats with probably 10 more seats.
Yeah, we'll be more to this.
10 more than now. I think that they're, because of the amount of Republican retirements,
yeah.
Harry Glenn's back there going, holy shit, am I going to lose some of my best votes up in Congress? because of the retirements, they're going to put in some, there's just, Republicans are giving up like really good people, like moderate Republicans. And so when the wave hits, it's going to hit and it's going to win in places where those Republicans, they should be Republican seats, but they're even money now. And so even if they win 80% of them, they're still, that's a 5 or 6 pickup for the Democrats.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's going to be similar to 2016 where the Democrats are going to win the popular vote, and that's going to push them over the top in a lot of these congressional races. Whether or not they can win the Electoral College, though, is what's going to be more questionable.
What about Senate?
Stays Republican.
Yeah, there's just not enough out there for the Democrats to flip it. Again, barring, a super wave, there just isn't enough competitive seats. Too much of the money will be eaten up by the presidential. I follow it, but I don't follow it so closely. Again, I think there'll be some interesting races to watch, like Arizona, Colorado. With Beto not running in Texas, that, takes that race off the map. That's what I'll say with it.
There are a couple seats that are going to be really interesting to watch. Alabama is a Republican state, but they have a Democrat there right now. So you don't want to assume, but with Jeff Sessions jumping in the race, not having Gordon Moore Jr. on there, that gives Republicans a better chance to get that one. So now suddenly Democrats have to win 4 to even get to 50. And Colorado is definitely, I think Cory Gardner is very vulnerable there. Joni Ernst in Iowa has a negative favorability rating. Maine, Susan Collins is probably win again, but there's a lot of Democrats and even moderate Republicans in that state who aren't happy with a sort of a Trump enabler that she has been despite her independent streak. You're talking about potential wave in knocking those people over, and if it's a wave, then it's not only flipping the Senate, that means Democrats won the presidency in a landslide. So I don't see a lot of scenarios where you're voting for Trump, but whoever's challenging Cory Gardner or Joni Ernst or Susan Collins.
All right, what about the Florida delegation? Any changes? Or is it still 14 GOP, 13 Dem for the House?
I think that the Ross Spano race could be very interesting. Now he's under a criminal investigation, we found out last week.
Allegedly.
I think he pretty much, I'm sure put that in there for libel purposes, but. I think anytime you're in an area of that's getting increasingly blue, it's still a Republican district, but the more Hillsborough grows, the bluer it's getting, and that district does have some Hillsborough in it.
and with the baggage that he's bringing to that race, that's a seat that could flip. I think the only other one that is potentially, I mean, Stephanie Murphy seems pretty strong in Central Florida, but that is the most purple, one of the most purple districts in the entire country. So that's going to be a tough one for Democrats to hold on to for through the next redistricting. But I think it could go. I think it could flip for 14, 13 Dems if that Ross Graham seat goes.
I think it could go maybe even a little bit further. I'm going to give like a keep an eye on notice for Donna Deegan up in CD4, which is traditionally a Republican stronghold. But John Rutherford, the ex-sheriff up there, is as dry as a popcorn fork and just really doesn't like D.C. And so, and Donna Deegan's like very popular, charismatic, local TV person. If a wave is starting to come together, then she could get, you know, mixed up into that. I don't think, I know they'll put somebody in Murphy just to antagonize her, but again, I think that that is safe. You know, the thing with Spano is like, that's just, we're talking about East Hillsborough, which is like the opposite of like Northeast St. Petersburg. And it's just like, I don't know what those people eat out there other than strawberries, but something just like, you know, makes them continue to vote for crazy people. And I just don't know at the end of the day whether or not the Democrats are going to be organized enough. Remember, this, so much of this comes down to the Democrats' ability to block and tackle and basic campaign stuff. And it's just like, it is Charlie Brown and the football over and over again, mm-hmm. and believing that they're going to turn, that they're going to be able to do things. You know, right now, think about this. For all that you're hearing about, like Democrats, and this is, you know, it's presidential. Republicans are out registering them this cycle. I mean, they have netted only 11,000 new registrations, or the Democrats have only netted 11,000 registrations this year statewide. The Republicans are out registering them. How is that happening? I mean, I know a lot of it is that people are registered, Democrats and Republicans are voting as independents and registering as independents, but that doesn't account for when there's an active Andrew Gillum spending millions of dollars, allegedly, on voter registration. They should be doing a lot better than that.
Good John Morgan impression.
I think Democrats will make the case that they've, the second half of 2019, they've done much better. And also, they're fighting against voter purges in parts of the state where I'm not alleging any sort of illegal activity, but there are a lot of people who were put on the voting rolls during the Obama years who voted to vote, who registered to vote for Obama, who haven't voted in subsequent elections, and those people are being removed from the ballot, removed from the voter rolls, and that's an uphill climb Democrats are going to have to face. Is not only re-registering those people, but finding new people to register, and that's going to be one of their challenges.
All right, Peter's not going to like this question, but in the unlikely event that CD13 flips, Charlie Crist loses, who's the one that beats him?
I'm not going to dignify that question with an earshot of Charlie Crist. Everybody's probably down at the bar. No, that's just a fool's errand. You know, that's just, it's a fool's errand. I don't get why, like, everybody was a Republican. I get why you put one candidate in against Charlie and do that, but, like, they're never going to get any money from the NRCC. I mean, that's just not going to happen. And so, no, and usually, like, let's say that you did have a David Jolly acolyte or something like that in there. Well, the NRCC was, and it wasn't David Jolly, because God knows the NRCC. But if there was just like a standard Republican running in there, the party would put $200,000 or $300,000 in there just to tie down Charlie for it. They're not even going to do that, especially when they're defending as much as they're going to do. So it is one of the most inexplicable fool's errands of this election cycle. And unfortunately, because it's in like the Tampa Bay market, and I'm not making fun of the Times or local stuff, we'll pay attention to this race when we should be paying attention. Every article that we write about Charlie Crist's race, we should be writing about Ross Bano stealing the last election.
So Charlie won like in 2018 with, I think, 54% of the vote, right? 55 against a total nobody. And I'm not suggesting that that shows that he's vulnerable or anything like that, but I think there's probably a reason there is four or five people jumping into that race, depending on the day of the week. And one of the candidates so far, Ana Paulina Luna, already has the Matt Gaetz endorsement. And suddenly, like, Don Trump Jr. is tweeting out for her. That's a lot of free media that she's going to be getting. And, you know, I'm not saying that that makes... I think if there was a candidate who's going to potentially challenge, and I haven't met all these people yet or talked to them or heard their platforms or anything, but having that kind of national firepower behind you and having an army of Trump supporters out there for you could potentially help her more than we would expect in a race that seems like it's a pretty safe blue district.
All right, and then just real quick, yes or no questions. Does the Pinellas County Commission flip from Democratic control to Republican? You're more local.
Absolutely not.
No.
All right. Does Jen Webb, House District 69, does she win re-election?
Not only absolutely yes, but with the help of moderate Republicans and the old Dennis Jones Beach Coalition that's still out there, kind of keeping things moderate. Jennifer's doing a really good job, and even though she's a progressive, has a lot of friends across the island.
Yeah, I think she was one of like the freshman of the year up there, so I would imagine that would help her.
All right, we'll open up to the audience for questions.
Harvey Landers. If Donald Trump is forced to release his tax returns, do you think that will have an impact on the election?
There's got to be a reason why he hasn't wanted to release them so far, right? You know, this is going to be... I had Terry Rizzo, the Democrat Party Chair, and Joe Rudin, the Republican Party Chair, for an event a couple weeks ago. And they were expecting like an 85% turnout race, like the highest of all time. And I don't know if something in the taxes would draw more people out than that, whether it swings then the 5 or 6% who are going to decide this election. I'm not sure. I mean, everyone went to the ballot box in 2016 knowing exactly what to say on that Access Hollywood tape, and it wasn't enough. So I don't know what. And the New York Times does some pretty compelling stories on his taxes and how him and his father made their money and avoided paying taxes for years and basically conned New York for decades. And I don't know how much that's moved the needle. But again, there's a reason why he hasn't given up yet. And so we don't really know what's in there that could sort of expose that door has been closed.
I look at Trump as just such a, from a different perspective of that. I think that your question is kind of framed in the old Bob Dole, where's the outrage perspective, and I get that. And like, everybody turns on Morning Joe in the morning, like, well, isn't this gonna be it? You know, like, he did X, why are we still doing that? And that doesn't have anything to do with the support of his base and why they believe in him. And they believe in him because the black president let gay people get married, and he's letting in Mexicans and they're stealing our jobs. And all the other jobs are getting offshore to Bangladesh. And I don't believe in any of that crap. And everybody in this room knows that I don't. But that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of that boogeyman. They're not reading Breitbart because, you know, they're looking to be, you know, enlightened. They're looking to have that shitty worldview that they have about the other that's out there, the whore. And they're so worried about that. They're just so, they look at things. They're so jaded because of 9/11. And then they took their money in 2008. And we just don't pay attention to that. So we just keep thinking that we are going to get him on a technicality. Like he's Al Capone. And it's just not going to happen. The only way that you're going to beat Donald Trump is with absolute end of civilization, war for democracy, more Democrats turning out than Republicans. Because that's what this is about. I'm not saying what side I'm on, but it is a war of civilizations. You are not going to degree of difficulty your way to victory against him. The only way you're going to win is if you build that Obama coalition and say, we are still going to be that shining city on the hill in a world that is increasingly right-wing, and have people aspire to that. But the idea that, oh, you know what, he paid 11% taxes instead of 13, why is that son of a bitch still in the White House? That's never going to knock him out.
All right. Yes, ma'am.
Tiffany Magus, what do you think about Mayor Pete? He's really risen in the polls. They keep comparing him to Obama and his campaign. He's gone from almost nowhere to tied for third in some polls. What do you think his chances are?
I was reading an interesting article in the Des Moines Register about when Randy Mott surge in Iowa, and he's surging at the wrong time. I mean, it's not, you never want to not be ahead, but from history, you kind of want to be starting to move a little bit later in the race. If you look at some of the names who were surging in Iowa around this time on the Republican and Democratic side over the last few decades, you'll see some funny names up there. It is oratory. He may be like Obama, and he's certainly very smart, but he has not been the heir to the Obama coalition of voters. I mean, if you look at his support among African Americans in South Carolina and other states so far, it's almost near zero. And Kamala Harris sort of exposed that a little bit last night and talked a little bit about how Democrats need to stop treating black voters as sort of like someone that they can rely on to come for them every 4 years, but don't do anything for them in the years in between. And as someone who is leading a city that has apparently some issues with diversity in hiring and racial tensions, I think people are in those communities have been wary of him. So at the same time, he's getting a ton of money from people who seem to believe in him, and I don't think anyone would have predicted 6 months ago that he'd be right where he's at right now in Iowa. So he could do the Obama upset, but it's a little bit harder to do that now because the caucuses have changed so much. And I think Obama exposed Hillary's weakness and sort of arrogance in Iowa of how to run a campaign. And Obama, by going to some of the honor caucuses and really gaming the system, showed how you're really supposed to do it. But no one's going to be surprised anymore. You can't surprise because of that. So,
I'm fascinated by the Mayor Pete candidacy and for what it represents. It is, you look on the stage last night and you basically see a Democratic Party that is five or six factions, each with about 15-20%. Of the party. African Americans have a little bit more of the overall vote, but it is the gay vote, it's the old white working class vote, it's the progressive coalition, it's the, you know, the increasingly strong LGBTQ community. And each one of them is coming to the table with, hey, I've got my 15 or 20%. Mayor Pete's is dual income, no children. And so there is his constituency is able to contribute stronger and more, and is hungrier to break through whatever we're going to call the glass ceiling is for an LGBTQ community candidate. And so I kind of look at him as, I don't know who it was beforehand, but is he Jesse Jackson? Is he the person who is going to run well and lay the groundwork for a candidate in 12 or 16 years? To get through the way that Jackson did for President Obama. I will say, you know, the reckoning is coming on the homophobia or perceived homophobia in certain parts of the African-American community, and that discussion is starting. And African-Americans are pushing back, and that's an interesting debate that has to go on inside of it. To me and for everybody here in this that's been around, kind of reminds me of when Darla ran for the first time. Great candidate. She lost surprisingly on that county commission race. Everybody's like, wait a second, how did she lose that race? I think that's going to be the same thing with Mayor Pete, but it will eventually lead to greater things. So insert the quote about the long arc of history working out. Mm-hmm. Of justice, excuse me, long arc of justice.
Bill Parker?
Thank you, Bartley Carlos. The I-4 corridor is traditionally the anchor of the state. Do you think the villages should take that over?
if you're referring to the crap at the bottom of the sea that you don't want to step into, yes, we can anchor the villages and all of their lunacy, throw them right off this thing. No, they're not the, and I get what you're doing, or I get what you're saying, they're not the anchor for the area, you know, for the villages. I just trade that out with West Tampa. You know, it's just like, there's as many progressive and Democratic voters in West Tampa that are one big block as there are in Sumter County. And so I think it speaks to, you know, just, yes, I-4 is still there, but, you know, I-4, also, I mean, Volusia went red, surprisingly, and Pinellas and Hillsborough, you know, if the Democrats are ever, I mean, this is the beachhead, right? So I don't know that it's going to be the deciding factor that it was, like it was in Gore versus Bush, where they were spending each $1 million a day on TV. Yes, they're going to be turning it out. Whoever wins I-4 will win Florida, but if the narrative is that Florida isn't the tipping point state that it has been, then maybe the tipping point area isn't as important either.
I was in the villages for the first time a few months ago. So the villages, because they've been such a strong counterbalance, and this is not just isolated villages, but anywhere where there's retired communities have been such a draw for white Republicans who are fleeing New York, New Jersey, the Midwest, what have you. There's a reason why 20 years ago we had Bush v. Gore and it was decided by 530 votes. And last year, 6 million people added to the population later, we still had an election that was decided by a recount. And it's because for every couple Democrats that move here, well, the demographics change a little bit in their favor, there's someone coming down and replenishing the will of Republican voters. So in that sense, it's obviously been a huge counterbalance to all the changes that have been going on in the state. But at the same time, I don't know if I-4 needs as much at least today or not, but if Democrats would have gotten the turnout in South Florida that the rest of the state had, then we would have a governor Andrew Little right now and Senator Bill Nelson. So in that sense, what would happen, turnout in Broward probably means more than anything, and that's probably going to be what we're going to be looking at on election night.
All right. I think Corey had her hand up. Someone time her.
Corey Adler. I'm wondering about your opinion about the cluster that is former felons, ex-felons. Is that going to have any bearing on the election? Or are they going to be able to vote?
As someone who is almost a former felon, this issue has always been very important.
I'm a future felon.
So it's always, they're going to be able to vote. I think DeSantis kind of knows that it's going to end there. And the most important part is in the counties where there are people who have lost their rights, Palm Beach, Miami Dade, et cetera, you have state attorneys like Dave Ehrenberg, who are set, and even in Hillsborough, they're setting up courts, they're setting up expedited court processes so that, you can have that $100 you still owe for that ticket or whatever, not paying your child support, whatever. Whatever's keeping you, they're setting up that system. And so is it going to be this mass block of votes? Well, it never was going to be that because we have this false perception. Listen, if you've just spent 15 years in jail for armed robbery, I don't know if registering to vote, it's like the first thing you're gonna do when you get out. Like, I think you've got some other priorities. You're not like, damn, man, I have got to vote for Mayor Pete. I don't know what's been going on out here, but I gotta do that. So it's just always been this kind of overstated situation. But it'll matter in a state where the governor was decided by 33,000 votes. I think actually just on I'll take 30 seconds, the most important decision was the one that came out 2 Fridays ago, which was that the governor's party does not get the auto spot at the top of the ballot. That can matter as much as 5%.
Yes.
And listen, they can flip the coin and it can still be Republicans up there. But that's a big deal. Again, in a state with 4 or 3 statewide recounts, that can matter a great, great deal.
Do you see that getting reversed by the Supreme Court?
I don't know the Supreme Court.
A lot smaller Supreme Court right now.
So the legislature said they're going to address it in some way. I don't really know what the outcome is going to be. There's an estimate that is 1.2 million potentially at potential felons that could get their rights restored. And I was with Joe Rudders and Terry Rizzo last week. They're like, we don't know where that number came from. Like, it could be as small as 25,000. I mean, we don't really have a really good sense of it. One big issue is that, regardless of how you feel about if it should include court costs, fees, restitution, and whatnot, there is no system right now set up that tracks any of this. And it's going to cost millions of dollars to set that up. And whether they can get that done in time for an election remains to be seen. That's the thing. And the governor just came off this budget. It gave no new money to address this gaping hole and this new mandate. So it's going to be, it's making it harder to implement even the stricter rules that were put in place by the legislature last year.
The thing that both of you spoke least about in this conversation is the policy positions and qualifications of the candidates. So what I would like to know is, in listing the obstacles to getting the best candidate into office, where would you rank the Electoral College and gerrymandering?
And she's asking barriers to the Democratic win on the Electoral College side of the presidency or the congressional side of gerrymandering.
Is that what you're asking him?
That's true.
I couldn't hear him.
Can you repeat my questions?
So it seems as if it's not the candidates that are the issue, from what you have said. It is the process. So in the process, what is the most difficult thing to getting us the best candidate? How would you rank gerrymandering and the Electoral College in letting the will of the people
succeed? Okay. I would not agree with the first part of the premise of the question about candidates, that us saying candidates don't matter, because I think that if there's anything, Kentucky just showed us that candidates absolutely do matter. You can have a really bad candidate like Mark Bevin and you can still win. But let's just say in places where it's generic. I think that gerrymandering, especially in Florida, is a myth. In fact, the Senate lines that you have now, the congressional lines that you have now, were drawn by Barbara Pariente, one of the most progressive voices on the Supreme Court. And the Democrats are still not able to win in the Senate, and the seat is in a seat or in a state which is basically purple. We have 14 congressmen and 14 Republicans and 13 Democrats. So I think the idea that we have these, yes, we have some horrible seats, you know, we have the Corinne Brown seat, you know, I think we have worked that out. I think the biggest obstacle, to answer your question specifically, I would say the biggest obstacle for Democrats is that they continue to fight. They fight like this instead of like that.
Right.
And it is, you know, there are less Republicans. They are, but when, you know, they just don't, having worked with dozens of candidates in this area for years, the way that the Democrats, the infighting, you know, you look at, like, that gubernatorial race, that, you know, Democrats elected Gillum, who was clearly not viable at the statewide level, instead of a Gwen Graham or a Philip Levine or a Chris Payne. It's just mind-boggling. And so, I'm not saying that you're saying this, but relying on these, like, boogeymen of gerrymandering and too much money and all that stuff, it's not that. It's the infighting. It is terribly the infighting.
Yeah, that's well said. I think candidates are going to matter because they're going to have to show who's going to be
the best to go up against Trump toe-to-toe. And for all the position papers that they're putting out there, I think that's the one thing that voters are most interested in. I mean, I think Medicare for All and some of these larger policy debates could very well shape who the nominee could be. And those are important conversations to have. I don't know if Democrats are eating each other. I mean, Republicans just had a 2016 nominating contest where they basically compared, the size of each other on stage in front of everyone. So that got pretty nasty too. So I think actually with the impeachment's taking up a lot of airtime, Democrats are now getting an opportunity to showcase what their bench looks like and all the people who they have. And instead of it being a nonstop Trump show every night on the nightly news, now we're going to talk about the Democratic field and keeping them and giving, and they're getting the oxygen that Trump had sucked out of the room for so long. So I don't necessarily know if it's a bad thing that we're having this elongated nominated contest. It's been sort of interesting to hear the different ideas that the party has and how actually deep the Democratic bench is compared to where it was 4 years ago when it was just Hillary and Bernie. So.
All right, let's go to one of our young tigers.
Hi, Pooja Mutukendi. You talk about this idea of creating the other, the outsider. Do you think immigration as an issue, as a topic, will have any bearing in this next election? Because it is a growing topic, and what they're doing in the poll is scary.
So I think Republicans probably want it to be because they think it's a winner for their base. And that's certainly when we go back and look at 2016, I think a lot of people didn't understand just how much of a boogeyman immigration was in parts of the country that have, I mean, Wisconsin couldn't be farther from the southern border, and yet immigration was like the number one thing people went to the poll for if you were a Republican. Democrats, I think, are a little bit more confused about whether or not they want to make an issue. I think they've, to some degree, they've expressed that a comprehensive immigration reform is an opportunity for us to engage with and court Hispanic and Latino voters in Florida. But Hispanic and Latino voters here are more complicated than I think pretty much anywhere in the country, and certainly they are a diverse and bifurcated group on their own. So I don't know if this becomes into a war on immigration, I think you're going to see Democrats unsure if they want to step into that fight again. I think it was good for them in the primary when the first debate was in Miami and they all went to Homestead and tried to prove that they were going to be the toughest on against pushing back against Trump's policies. But you've seen them a little bit shirk away from the debates since then. And they all ask this question, does your healthcare plan include undocumented Americans? They all said yes, but now they've all sort of reeled that back in too. So it kind of shows how they are hesitant to get into that fight because this election, to some degree, might be decided by the same voters who voted for Trump in 2016 on that issue.
It's neat that we have this issue. Like, it's just amazing to me when there's people who your family came over 3 generations from, and it's just like, I just want to scream. I just was in New York City, and I see this vibrant community, and I always want to take my Republican friends, like my thing now, because I don't even argue with my Republican friends, I'm like, okay, you can have the trucks and the guns, and we'll pick out some states, and we're gonna take Facebook and the arts and the movies and the good restaurants, we're going to take the Duran Duran albums, and let's just like stop with this, like trying to like fight with each other about this. It's going to be an issue because, number one, Trump used it as his number one promise to his base. Number two, the proof of that is they're going to put cameras up at the border to show the progress on. There is no greater Republican turnout issue than immigration. That's why they keep hitting on it again and again. It is to scare people, to scare their rural voters. It's a rural-urban divide. I always find it, I'm just like, I want to say to Republicans, I'm like, if you really don't like these metropolitan areas, why don't you vacation in Birmingham? Like,
Why does this make me an asshole? Like, I never see people going like, I can't wait to hit the plane up. Like, I love how white it is. But no, instead they get to like, oh, I just got back from New York City and I just had all this food. I don't even know how to pronounce it, but I love it. Democrats, on the other hand, I think they missed the boat in Miami. I don't even think they asked a question. I think they asked one question. Or, I don't think they asked a question on the debate stage in Miami about immigration. They didn't ask, or they weren't asked, they didn't talk about any issues about Venezuela, Cuba, all of the issues in South America. It's just always asking Julian Castro about how, you know, his brother's doing. And it's just like it is just so, it's so cool black friend, like from 20 years ago, that they just don't, they're just so afraid to talk about it.
All right, I think we have time for one more question.
This will be the last question.
Shannon.
All right, Shannon Love, bring it back locally.
You follow me on Twitter.
I do.
What's your Twitter handle?
Shannon Love et al. Fast forward to 2021, bringing it back to St. Pete. There's been increased coverage talking about Booker and the fact that the Rhodes Scholar hasn't been mentioned with him with race relations. St. Pete, Commissioner Ken Welch runs against Darvin Rice, LGBT versus Progressive Club of St. Pete. Does that bring a micro-reckoning for the Democratic Party here in St. Pete?
I can't wait for this race. I mean, we've been, let's be honest, we've been waiting for this race. I mean, first of all, Ken Welch is threatening to run for mayor for like the last 12 years and never pulls the trigger. And Darden, who I think is maybe the most articulate candidate in the region, like listen to what Darden says about every word. There is a candidate that knows that she lost two races before and has honed her craft. But Shannon, I think you're setting it up incomplete in a way. Don't forget our good friends at the floor or at the St. Pete Chamber. They will go find somebody up in the Old Northeast, some moderate Republican that none of us have heard about yet. That's a small businessman that we all love, and they will let the two progressives fight against each other. And then, you know, John Smith, who is whoever won the Chamber's Award 2 years ago for Small Businessman of the Year, is the next mayor of St. Petersburg. I don't even know who that is, but that is who, and that, so this race will be fought in that context.
He's right.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much, Peter. Just one last question. What's your favorite restaurant on 4th Street? You can't say Chick-fil-A. If you were here 3 years ago, you'd
be we actually, for the, we sent the guy's candidacy. I guess Katie Benzman, didn't he run against that one? And he couldn't answer where a restaurant was on 4th Street. Other than Chick-fil-A, that's kind of heard about it. And it's just like, and I feel bad because JD is maybe the nicest human being like around, and like I still see him about it. So, yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much. I'll turn it back over to Keely.
Thank you very much.